Blog Talk Radio.
And now, welcome to Penn's Blog Post Radio with your hosts Jeff Lohman and Daniel Evans. Welcome to Penn's Blog Post Radio. I am your host, Jeff Lohman. Sitting next to me is Daniel Evans. We got a lot to talk about, folks. The Pittsburgh Penguins did not have a good first game. There's a lot to talk about there. There's a lot going on in the NHL. But what I wanted to get to first was Sidney Crosby talking after the post game, and then we'll get to that. So let's check out what Sidney Crosby had to say.
Yeah, I mean, we had some decent looks. I thought we gave up a few kind of big chances that you don't want to give up, but still had our fair share of chances, and obviously special teams, as we know, is really important, and, you know, we gave a couple up on the penalty killer.
Frustrated by the inability to generate offense the way you guys would be expected most of the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, I don't put a lot into the preseason. I think that for the most part we didn't really have a full lineup, so I think we'll judge it for what it is. I mean, we got to find ways to score goals, and you know, whether it's power play chipping in or, you know, find a ways in front, but wasn't lacking chances, I didn't think, tonight.
So there you have it. Sidney Crosby saying that they really didn't have an opportunity in preseason to play together as a team, which I think categorically probably defines the reason why they lost. And he also talks about, we've got to find a way to score goals. Have we not heard that before? But before we get to all of that, we're going to talk about some NHL stuff really quick. There were some NHL games last night. Winnipeg 6-2 over Boston. Ottawa 3-1 over Buffalo. Eichel scored his first NHL goal. Tampa Bay 3. Philadelphia 2, St. Louis 3, Edmonton 1, McDavid no points. Nashville 2, Carolina 1, Dallas 3, Penguins 0. For tonight, you have Winnipeg versus New Jersey, the Rangers versus Columbus, Toronto versus Detroit, Chicago versus the New York Islanders in the Barclays Center in Brooklyn. And you also have Arizona versus the Los Angeles Lakers. A couple news and notes as well. Wisniewski is out for 6 months, has an ACL tear for Carolina, so he's going to be gone for the next 6 months as well. Former Pittsburgh Penguins Simon Dupree, probably the biggest, dumbest trade Jim Rutherford has ever made, has definitely come back to haunt this team in a lot of ways, but he signs a five-year deal worth $18.5 million, and it's 3.42 AAV or 3.5 depending on his bonus. As well, Mike Richards is now a free agent. In case you didn't know, he had filed a grievance August 10th with the NHL Players Association against the NHL in void of his contract. And in addition to that, he's also facing charges of possession of controlled substance, and he is due to be in court December 8th. So Mike Richards is a free agent. Now, we're going to get to the Penguins game. But the first thing I wanted to say before I let Daniel have his few words, because I'm sure he has a few, we have to take into consideration one thing, ladies and gentlemen. And that one thing is that this was a one-game event. This is the first game of the regular season. I did not expect the Penguins to be unreal, but I also didn't expect to see the same exact kind of stuff that we saw last season. If you want to call in and talk about anything Penguins-related or anything hockey-related, 323-642-1216. Again, that's 323-642-1216. Dan, what were your thoughts of the game last night?
Okay, I'm not going to get far ahead of myself. One, first game of the season. However, I can correlate a difference between last year's opener and this year's opener. Last year's opener, when it looked like, oh, we're coming out of the gates, guns blazing, it's because the team had time to congeal. Whereas, and I said this morning on our website, that's pensblogpost.com. For those who have not subscribed yet, please do. It's a really good site, to say the least. But anyhow, this team, however, that was on the ice last night, was basically playing together for the first time. Now, I've known they've had practices together, but it's something that Jeff and I have said time and again, and Jeff's played the game, that you can have all the good practices you want, but what matters is on the ice against your opposition, night in, night out, or day in, day out, if you have an afternoon game. So I was upset to see more of the same last night of last year, but I also understand that it's only the first game. No need to freak out yet. Now, mind you, if the team continues to struggle, then there are going to be problems that have to be addressed. But right now, I just hope for a little bit of consistency going into tomorrow night.
And, you know, conversely, you know, like Dan said, like I've said, one game getting skunked out isn't the worst thing that can happen, but there's also something to be said for the way you play. And last night was really not – we're going to break it down a million ways from Sunday, but I think at the end of the day is that you expected to at least see something other than what we saw. Now, let's look at some stats for a minute, because stats, while they are an important part of the game, it's not everything. Looking at the shots, the Penguins had 37 shots to Dallas's 24. The Penguins were 0 for 3 on the power play. Dallas, of course, was 2 for 5. Hits, the Penguins were out-hit by Dallas 23-21. As far as faceoffs, the Penguins won 40 faceoffs to Dallas's 38. Giveaways for the Penguins, 5, 11 for Dallas. And that's an interesting fact we're going to talk about in a second, because when you're in a situation of giveaways, if Dallas gives away the puck 11 times, you have got to make them eat it. And the fact that the Penguins have had this problem in the past few seasons, it's still showing its ugly face in many ways, even though it is only one game in the season. Takeaways, 11 aside. So both teams took the puck away from the opposing side 11 times. Some interesting face-off numbers. Evgeny Malkin was 8 for 19 at 42%. Cullen was 8 for 11 at 73%. Crosby was 16 for 30 at 53%. And Bonino was 8 for 17, which is right around 45%. So if you look at the stats make the game almost look closer in a lot of ways. Unfortunately, the game wasn't close. And one of the first things I wanted to talk about was the fact that the Penguins just – first of all, Dallas has a lot of speed. And anytime you're playing a team that has a lot of speed, if you're not prepared for that, then you end up trying to play run and gun. And one of the things that we said in our pre-Dallas game was that if the Penguins got into a situation offensively where they tried to play run and gun with Dallas, they would get beat. And that's exactly what happened. The other factor that we also said would happen is that if the defense collapsed, if one – and I said this specifically, repeatedly – if Chris Letang goes to the boards, then – Ian Cole, who's his partner, has to cover the slot. And one of the things we saw last night was Ian Cole covered the boards. Letang got lost in the shuffle, and Dallas buried a goal into Marc-Andre Fleury. And we're also going to talk about him a little bit, because there seems to be a lot of theory out there that Marc-Andre Fleury stood on his head last night, and he really didn't. He kept the Penguins in the game the whole entire second period for the majority of game. He kept it 1-0. But at the end of the day, that short side from Marc-Andre Fleury has been a huge, huge detriment. It's always been that way with him. And I would say of the three goals, two of them were extremely, as far as I'm considering, weak. I also didn't think that the Dallas netminder had to stand on his head. There was a Fleury the last 4 minutes of the game where he had to make three or four tough saves. But that's something else we're going to get into, because I don't like it when people say, wow, you know, if he hadn't had that game, this game's totally different. And I'm sorry, but the stats tell a story. But the idea that even if you outshoot a team, you have to look at where the shots are coming from. The majority of the Penguins' shots came from the point with nobody filtering in front or setting a screen. The other parts of the shots came from the outside of the net, so or directly straight in on him. And that's one of the things that the Penguins had a problem with all last season. But, Dan, I want to get your take on the forwards. What did you see that you liked, and what did you see that you necessarily maybe didn't like?
Oi, oi, oi. Forwards. One thing I did not like happened to be on the power play. Jeff and I were watching the game together, and it was pass, pass, pass. And both of us are yelling at the TV, shoot the damn puck, you know. And but the forwards, again, to that coin, we saw what we knew we were going to see from some of them. However, the fact that Crosby did not have a shot on goal last night is really bizarre, because there are very few nights when Crosby's on that ice for as long as he was. He wasn't on there as long as Letang was. He was nearly on the ice for half the game. But for Crosby not to get a shot on goal was just mystifying to me. And I saw things that I didn't like, such as Bo Bennett getting back to old habits again, which we've addressed time and time again, so it's like beating a dead horse. So I'm not going to go into that tonight. But the least we could have seen from them is a little bit more resilience. Because at the end of the day, your goaltender can only do but so much. Forwards have to score, defenders have to defend, and the goaltender has to mind the net in that proper order. But somehow it was just lost last night. And I'm still at a loss for words this evening about it.
Well, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's your offense has to be powered. Your defense has to be there. And the goalie, most importantly, has to make that first stop.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't make the first stop, the second and third and fourth aren't going to matter, because there won't be any. So I think from my perspective, the one thing that I saw the forwards do that I did like was they had to rely a little bit on that stretch pass, because Dallas is way too fast for them. And I appreciated the fact that they were using that last night just to get the puck out of the zone, because there were some times last night in the game, 2 and 3 minutes, where the Penguins just could not get it out of the zone. And that's one of the things that's when a stretch pass is utilized, get it out. You know, the Penguins have always had a problem with just dumping the puck out. I don't know why everybody just worries about the icing. Just dump the puck, get it out of the zone, and collect yourself, catch a breath. You know, and that's a big problem on this team. It's a big problem that this team has had. The other thing that I saw that I did like was they seemed to break out incredibly quickly out of our defensive end. And I like that, because that's a lot better than this loop-de-loop crap they did all season long with the wingers coming from the top of the blue line all the way back to the half circle to collect the puck. They didn't have to do that last night. So that's, I like that. I think, you know, I think the transition is very, very, very good. I also think that Phil Kessel is incredibly fast for being the size he is. And I'm not saying he's fat. I'm not saying he's tall. I'm just saying he's a pretty big dude. And the way he moves and just the speed of his shot is incredible. I have not had a chance to really watch Phil Kessel in the preseason, obviously. And I really didn't give two shits about him when he was in Toronto. So watching that, I marvel at the speed that he has. And I marvel at the way he's able to get the puck off his stick. I thought Hornquist had a good game. I thought he played agitator role pretty well. I think guys like Plotkinov are finally experiencing what the NHL is like versus the KHL, because you don't have nearly as much room to move. I thought Perron was horrible, other than a couple of body hits. And we're going to get into all of that. But let's talk about defense for a minute, because this is the defense. Scoring will come. There's no doubt in my mind that scoring is going to come. Okay, and keep in mind, I'm saying this again, before anybody sends me hate mail, it is one game, okay? But defensively, I knew exactly what was going to happen last night. I think, Dan, we knew this back in June when it wasn't addressed about a defense mode. Before we get into all that, let me ask you this. Dan, what do you think defensively, not what the problem is, because we're gonna talk about that in length, but what did you see out of the defense last night, other than Chris Letang and Ian Cole, who I both thought had great games? What did you see that kind of went wrong?
To be honest, having Lovejoy paired with Mata, I mean, no wonder why defensive pairings are just as vital as your forward lines. And Mata honestly looked kind of dazed and lost last night, and in a sense, it's because of who he's paired with. But then again, it goes into something that we're going to address later, The need for a defenseman was not answered. But what it tells you, when you just look at the aspects of last night, which we're going to cover later on, the trade that we sent out with Dupre was a mistake. A big mistake. Because even though he's young, I guarantee you that a pairing of Dupre and Mata would have been a heck of a lot better and on point than Lovejoy and Mata. You know, I commend Chris for being on the ice for close to half the game. You know, 28 minutes, that was impressive. And Cole did his thing as well. But the defense just looked lost when Letang and Cole weren't out there, hands down.
You know, and you know what? That's a really good point. And maybe there's something we need to kind of clarify and go in depth a little bit. Look, you've never played hockey. The way I can easily describe playing defense for you is you have two jobs. One, you got to pinch and get the guys away from your netminder's view. Two, get the puck out of the zone. All the X's and O's and all the videos in the world aren't going to help you become necessarily a better defenseman if you have no idea what you're doing to begin with. And you always match up a defensive partner with a guy who complements your style. They're not going to put two guys that are highly offensive together. They're going to take a guy like Letang, who's highly offensive and very good defensively, and put him with a guy like Cole, who is more of a rough-and-tumble, grit, sandpaper guy, a more stay-at-home defenseman. Now, when you take a guy like Brian Dumoulin and put him with Rob Scuderi, that's where the nightmare begins, because Rob Scuderi couldn't catch up with the turtle at this point on the ice, and Dumoulin backs up all the way in past the circle, and you can't. Letang said it best. You got to step up. If you get beat, you get beat, but you have to at least step up, and you don't give a team like Dallas any more room than they need to. And that is one of the categorically messed up things that we saw last night. And I think defensively, they're too passive. Once again, they're very passive. And we're going to get into the passivity here in a minute, because that's going to be a portion of this show that some people are going to not like, but we're just going to be completely honest and call it as we see it. But I think defensively, they're too passive. I think that they, maybe not necessarily Chris Letang and Ian Cole, but Lovejoy and even Mata, like you said, he looked just not out of sorts. And I think a lot of Mata's problem is he's coming off shoulder surgery again, and he's probably a little timid, but it also doesn't help when you're a B-grade defenseman playing with a D-grade Lovejoy.
Yeah.
That doesn't help, especially when Lovejoy backs in and doesn't step up either. He's a very, very passive player. And over the years, you know, Nick Lidstrom could play it any way he wanted to. And I think he's one of the best defensemen we've ever seen in the NHL, other than Bobby Orr and a couple other ones. Kasparaitis, on the other hand, was not known for his offensive prowess. But if you came over that blue line, you are going to pay. And granted, the NHL is different now. Every single one of these forwards from Letang threw a great hit last night, but Letang by nature is not a feisty, nasty defenseman. Lovejoy is a pushover. Scuderi can't catch anybody. Mata is not a very physical defenseman at all. Cole, fairly much a grit and sandpaper guy, but he hasn't really... He did that a little bit in the playoffs last season, but hasn't really, obviously, because it's only been one game. But once you get past those six, it's like, wait a minute. At one point, we had Bortuzzo, who would destroy anybody that came over the blue line. Gonchar would hit people if they came over to the blue line. Kasparaitis and Samuelson, both, Schell and Elf. You know, we could talk all day about those guys. But when your defense is passive like that, one of the things that you need to do, especially with a team like Dallas, as fast as they are, punish them. If they're not punished and they don't feel like every time they come into the zone that they're – it's almost like the under Bielsma. We played Boston two seasons ago. Every time we played Boston, we made Chara pay. We made all their defensemen pay. We would hit them in their own end. We did it all game long. Bielsma gets to the playoffs and tells them not to do it. So the philosophy here is if you make them pay from the minute the puck drops, it's going to be in the back of their head all game long. Oh, here we go. I got to go in the corner to get the puck, or I got to go back behind the net to retrieve it, and I'm going to get hit by like Farnham, or I'm going to get hit by Kunitz. You know, and so that's the style they need to play. And for whatever reason, they don't. I think I have a really good handle right this second on why they're not playing that reason, and we're going to get to that. But overall, was there anything in the game that you thought you saw that you says, wow, that's really good? And then is there anything other than just the obvious about the defense that you just kind of shook your head and said, this is not unacceptable?
Actually, several of the hits were really, really good hits. And y'all can ask Jeff. I like the physical style of hockey. I'm old school. I also enjoyed seeing the speed of Kessel. I mean, that is something that this team has needed on that top line, along with Crosby, is someone who's got speed, and he's got that in Phil Kessel. But those are two good things to take from it, speed and also the hits. But the other side of the coin is you have to keep it consistently night in, night out. And the only problem with trying to play the speed game with Dallas is that they're one of the quickest teams in the NHL. So if you're not used to playing a run-and-gun style for 60 minutes, eventually you're going to run out of gas. And sadly, in effect, that's what happened to the Penguins last night, is they got caught in a run-and-gun game, and they ran out of gas. You know, and there's no getting around it. And they just need to build that speed continuity factor as much as they can and get guys that can actually play. If that's going to be the style you play, hard with speed, you do it. But you have to get everyone onto the same page.
No, I totally agree. I think that's exactly the way it needs to be. And I think one of the other issues, too, is anytime you look at a team, like player for player, roster for roster, you can tell who's going to be good and who isn't. And the one thing I would like to say, too, and I should have brought this up right at the top, the big subtle difference between last night and, say, last season was this team didn't give up last night. I mean, they kept going from start to finish, and they had flurries at certain points in the game where they could have scored. I don't think they had enough traffic in front, but it is what it is. Look, we take one on the chin. We lost 3-0. There's a learning curve. These guys are going to have to adjust. But I think as a whole, this is a bigger problem going forward, and I don't care what anybody says about this being one game to an extent. And the extent or the allowance would be that this team defensively does not have what it takes. And call it inexperience. You know, they wanted to go with the youth movement. I'm a big fan of the youth movement, but I also realize that you have to have some grit back there. And if you don't have grit, you're desperately in trouble. I mean, we can go back a couple seasons where we had Derek Englund. I mean, a lot of people complained about how horrible he was, but guess what? Other teams knew they were going to pay when they came over the blue line, and other teams knew if they stood in front of the net, they were going to get hammered. And this team, for whatever the reason being, wants to play an old New Jersey Devils type of system. And I don't understand that, and especially not in this division to begin with. But, however, I want to, right before we move to another subject, I want to go to NHL Game Breaks with Dan.
Okay, folks, here we go. With 11:08 left to go in the second period, the Winnipeg Jets are leading the Devils 2-0 with 12:31 left to go in the second. The Rangers are beating the Jackets 1-0. In Detroit, in the battle of the Leafs versus the Wings, Volume 1, with 3:01 left to go, it is the Wings over the Leafs right now 2-0. And in the Brooklyn debut for the regular season of the Islanders in their new home, the Hawks are spoiling it 1-0.
Boo, we don't like the Blackhawks here. So there you have with the NHL game break. We will come back definitely to you guys with another game break, probably closer to 9:00. As well, if you want to call in, 323-642-1216. We're going to try to get to you guys as quick as we can. Boards are lighting up, but we got a lot to discuss. So once again, give us a ring, 323-642-1216. You can talk to me or Dan about the Penguins. You can talk to us about cooking if you want. What else? You got any ideas? Gangsters. We can talk about gangsters for a while.
With hockey, Penguins.
There you go. Hockey, anything you want to talk about. But next on this list is Gary Agnew. And this is something that Dan and I have been discussing probably for, what, 2 seasons?
Yeah. Easy?
Okay. 2 seasons. We both want Gary Agnew fired. Now, let me explain why I want Gary Agnew fired. I could just simply tell you I just don't like the way he looks, because he looks like the peanut guy. All he needs is the monocle. But that's not the reason. The reason why I don't like Agnew is he likes a system that is typically very, very passive. Now, there was an article on the Pittsburgh Penguins website today by our personal favorite reporter, Dan's secret lover, Michelle Cracchiolo. Now, here's my problem with Michelle Cracchiolo. She does nothing but write fluff pieces, and she doesn't know what she's talking about when it comes to hockey. So, now that we've gotten that out of the way, her report was basically, you know, last night's game of how Fleury saved the day, and had it not been for their great goaltending, this team couldn't have won. Michelle, I hate to tell you this, honey, but we didn't score a single goddamn goal. You can't win a goal, honey. That's sexist, isn't it? I shouldn't do that. I call it – all right, well, the point is that if you don't score a goddamn goal, you can't win the game. It's that basic. I can sit here and write you a litany list of wonderful, poetic verses on how the Penguins could have done this and how the Penguins should have done that and had it not been for this. Point of the matter is they didn't score a goddamn goal, and that's the way it goes. The offense was tepid. They couldn't find any chemistry together. It'll get better. It certainly will. But – back to Gary Agnew. So she did an article with Gary Agnew, and I guess asked him some, you know, real tough trip questions, because they always ask real tough questions. She tried to get his take on the defensive issues, if there are any. And his way of explaining it, more or less, and I'm going to paraphrase, I wrote this down earlier. I swear to God, I get right here. Oh, thank you. Dan's going to pull it right up. Okay. Here's what Captain Obvious had to say. I think they're basically a group of guys that are going to find their identity, but what we're looking for in terms of speed and puck moving and defending. We don't have big, mean defensemen. No shit. But we've got a bunch of guys that, for me right now, are the way the NHL has gone, the prototypical defensemen. I'm sorry, but I don't care what team you look at. Look at the Rangers. They are not a passive in the slightest. And he continues to go on and on and on and on and make no sense about how the things are going to get better and we move along. As you know, we didn't really – none of these guys really played here that much, so it's a work in progress. But I think it's been great. I don't know what game he's watching. I don't know what on earth he's thinking, but this is perhaps my favorite one. The good teams have two good lines. So whether they face Tyler Seguin or Jamie Benn or they face Spezza and Hemsky, it's two good lines. They're going to have to play. Do we have the Martin Letang shutdown pair? No, but I love our balance. Huh? Oh, my God. There's a good chance we're going to roll three sets of D against four sets of lines and blah, 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 blah. And more or less, he just kind of goes on to say he likes what we have. He's confident. Well, he said this shit, and I say shit because that's exactly what it is. He said this crap all last season, okay? And, yeah, it was Martin and Letang. It's almost like saying, like, Martin and Lewis. But were Martin and Letang shut down last year? Absolutely. But guess what? You don't go out, and I'm going to get to this again, and we're going to keep hammering on this until everyone gets it, okay? You cannot have a passive team in this division. You certainly can't have a passive team playing against the West. In olden days, it was the East that was the tough physical games. Now they're out West. It's sort of switched a little bit. If they want to play run and gun, that's not going to work against Toronto. Well, it may because they suck. But that's not going to work against Detroit. It's not going to work against Tampa Bay. It's not going to work against the Flyers. It's not going to work especially against Columbus. Do I need to go on? Are you guys hearing me now? 323-642-1216. So my beef with Agnew is that he likes a passive system, and he seems to think that the defensemen we have now are perfect and everything's great. I don't know what game he's watching, but it's not the same game I apparently watched. He apparently is fine with playing passive, and it's apparent to me that he does not want grit and sandpaper. Well, if that's going to be the case, then this defense is going to get pushed around the rest of the year. Dan, you got any thoughts?
When I read it earlier, all I thought was an old SOS-style single signal to send out to people. Help. 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 Because it's the same causality loop that we've had with Gary Agnew. One of the things I loved about Bertuzzo, and even back in the day, back when the Penguins had the back-to-back cups of Samuelson, is if you cross that line, Ulf was going to nail you. Now, mind you, before Ulf came to Pittsburgh, people really didn't like him that much. Jeff, remember that? But once he came to Pittsburgh and he showed people what it was like to have a physical defenseman, people in Pittsburgh fell in love with physical defense. And now, honestly, the last couple of years, the defense has really been more of a scoring and kind of a, well, we'll just sit back. You can't do that. Okay? I realize that it's a different game, per se, than it was in the early 90s or even well back in the day, the 60s, 70s, 80s. But to that point, yes, times change. But in the Metropolitan Division, where you've got the Islanders, where you've got the Devils, the Rangers, the Flyers, the Capitals, the Hurricanes, and the Blue Jackets, all breathing down your necks. And a bulk of those teams are pretty damn physical. Someone please correct me in the audience if I'm wrong about that. To be the one team, or maybe one of two out of eight, that isn't physical on D and just allows the opposition to walk all over you, all that tells me is you're relying on your forwards to do the scoring. The defense, whatever. And it's coming up to Fleury or Zadkov to mop up the damage at the end of the night. And that is a recipe for disaster in all caps, point blank, end of story.
And we can even go perhaps even further. And the reason why I say further is this goes to Jim Rutherford too. And there's something I would really like to play for Jim Rutherford, because this is what I would like to just stare at him and say.
Hello!
Hello! Are you on planet Earth?
Hello!
And the reason why I say that is because he had all offseason to take care of the defensive problem, and now he's in a catch-22. Because now it's apparent, even after the first game, that his concern, which was that we did not have at least one more guy that we could seriously depend on to be maybe a little tougher than the rest, now Rutherford's got some things to think about. And that's not to say that moving forward past this game, if the Penguins go 7-2-1, for example, that it's a huge issue. But I think ultimately at the end of the day, this is going to fall on Rutherford. And what you can't blame on Rutherford is the system. The system is Johnston's system. And Johnston tells Agnew the system he wants run, and Gary Agnew does whatever it is Gary Agnew does. At this point, I don't know. But what I do know is that guys like Brian Dumoulin back up way too much. Scuderi, for example, last night could not keep up with the flow of play. He got lost in the corners. He got beat to the puck. But yet, if you go to the Trib, Scuderi had a good game. And I don't understand what games they watch. I really don't, because Scuderi didn't play well. And Ben Lovejoy played semi-great. No, he didn't. Just like Fleury had to stand on his head. No, he didn't. So that's the point. And that's why we want everybody to go to our website, www.penslogpost.com, where you can get the truth, get up-to-the-minute information, you can get analysis, in-depth articles, and you're going to get it called honestly. We're not about fluff. You can go ahead and call in at 323-642-1216. That moves us to this topic. If the Penguins have to make a move defensively, if that's the way that this goes, and Rutherford has said he would rather do it sooner than later, he would do it at the beginning of the season rather than wait till the middle or the end. What are the options for the Penguins really going forward? Because the only option is to really go out and find somebody, but you're dealing with cap issues, you're dealing with personnel, and you're dealing with who you could possibly move. I think David Perron is not on this team by the All-Star break. And I don't say that because I don't like him. I say that because he really doesn't fit in on the third line. and he hasn't fit in on the first line. And I'm not saying anything bad because it's just one game and they can get it together. But I wasn't impressed with Bonino at all. His faceoffs are great. Cullen, same deal. He looked slow, but his faceoffs, 73%. That was the best on the team. That's like your LaPierre from last season. So I wonder, and this is a question. Here's the question. I want to ask you a question before we get into the X's and O's of a trade. Last season, Rutherford trades first-round draft pick for Winnick. We get LaPierre. Who else do we get? Arcabello at one point.
At one point, we had the guy from Arizona that we lost our draft pick with.
Okay, yeah. So he brings in a bunch of guys last year, Spalling.
Clint Hammer,
Spalling. He brings in all these guys. And the problem that we had last season was he filled in the third and fourth line with guys that just didn't play well. And what I'm afraid of is he's done the same exact thing this time. Do I think Cullen's a better player than Arcabello? Sure. Do I think Cullen's going to put up Spalling numbers? No. Do I think that Bonino is going to put up Spalling numbers? No. Not playing alongside Bennett, he's not. That's definitely not going to happen. So, has Rutherford effectively done the same thing that he did last year? And the only difference being is he added a 50-goal scorer in Phil Kessel. Now, I don't want everybody to get all crazy and scream, oh, my God, these guys are going crazy. It's just a one game. Well, you're right. It is one game, but we're seeing a lot of the same similarities in the way that Jim Rutherford runs a business. He can only do with what the cap allows him to do. But has he made good decisions? Did we ever pay for Kessel? Probably. But at the end of the day, we needed Phil Kessel. And hopefully that'll work out. But Dan, what do you think? You guys can call in 323-642-1216. If you want to scream at us, go ahead and call in 323-642-1216. Do you think Rutherford essentially has made the same moves?
I feel like we're trapped in that loop, a never-ending story, and we're just repeating the same thing when it comes to Rutherford's trades. Over and over again. And this isn't the first team that he's done it with, because he essentially did the same type of things in Carolina. You know, when we played our first game in Raleigh last year, they gave him a standing ovation. But I bet you a part of that standing ovation was more of a thank God he's gone, because of the fact that he basically ruined a team. And when you look at what he's done in Pittsburgh so far, the only thing really of note was the Kessel trade. When you look at his the way he did things last season, he waited forever to get a trade of worth, knowing well that Dupuis wasn't coming back with a blood clot, and knowing well that Mata was out because of his second surgery on his shoulder. And he waited forever. And by the time he actually made moves, 99.9% of them did not pan out, ladies and gentlemen. And on top of that, at the trade deadline, Jeff Southchoppin, we trade to pray. Hold on. Okay, Dan, what's the punchline? Who's gone? Who are we getting? Lovejoy. All of a sudden, there's dead silence at the other end of the line. And Jeff is like, fuck, fuck, fuck. I was like, you mad, boss? He said, oh, yeah, that's an understatement, sir. And I said, yeah, same here. We have nothing personal against Rob Scuderi. We have nothing personal against Bonino. We have nothing personal against Lovejoy or any other player. It's just that these moves have not translated well on the ice. And that is going to be a problem. So eventually, not only is the system not working, and that'll put the coaching staff under the microscope, but when you see how the trades do not work out, that, my friends, will put one Jim Rutherford also under the microscope. Because, yes, it is a GM's responsibility to bring good players year in, year out, and throughout the season until the deadline. And, yes, it's up to the coaches to coach up a team to win and meet up to expectations. And it's up to the players to produce off of that system and win and excel. But when that's not happening, and this is a repeated thing over and over again, changes are going to have to be made in how this team makes trades. Or else my prediction of fifth could be what Brian Shoup messaged me, sixth or fifth at this point. So time will tell.
No, good points. I mean, really good points. And I think I think in a whole, you know, I have to look at these moves. And granted, we're one game in. Okay, so I don't want everybody saying, oh, here they go again with this shit. Of they hate the Penguins, because that's what people say to us. We hate the Penguins. First of all, I've been around the sport over 30 years, so I know what I'm kind of talking about, okay? And that's not ego. That's just I have knowledge. That's just if you don't, I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. But the idea, okay, that this is always one game in, and things can turn around, and they will. I'm sure they will. But this team is going to probably, at this point, with the defensive scheme that they have and the players that they have, they're going to have to rely on outscoring the opponent. And that's not going to work for very long. They had to do that last season. But when they did it last season, it was one line. And that's a big issue. Now, we can argue, is Bonino an upgrade over...
For season.
Okay. Let me say it this way. Cullen is definitely an upgrade over Craig Adams. I think he's also an upgrade over Arcabello. I think they're upgrades over Klinkhammer. I think ultimately, and this is something I want everybody to pay attention to, David Perron is making $4.5 million to play on the fourth line. Granted, he sort of slides in on that third and that fourth. At some point, that's going to be a problem. They didn't want to pay Brandon Sutter a whole lot of money to play third line. They definitely didn't want to pay Jordan Staal first line money for a third line. And David Perron is making first-line money. At some point, that's going to be a problem, especially if he doesn't score. But it's not about kicking individual players, because I'm getting to a point, believe it or not. If you want to call in and scream at us, 323-642-1216. There's a point I want to make, and it goes back to last year's trade deadline. Getting Ian Cole from St. Louis for Robert Bortuzzo, and I think it was a third-round pick that we got in return. I thought that was a solid move. I thought Bortuzzo slid in as a seventh defenseman. The only thing that we miss out of him truly is that grit. Now, Cole adds a little bit of that. We haven't seen it, obviously, because we're only one game in, but I thought at the tail end of the season last year, plus the playoffs, he was very nasty. He showed that he could be nasty. I think we upgraded there. But where I get lost is where we get to Ben Lovejoy.
Lovejoy.
Rutherford does not want to circle the wagons, but yet he repeatedly does that. Gonchar, good example. We don't want Downey. He's a tough guy. Oh, let's bring in Tom Sestito. Well, we don't want Tom Sestito. We're going to bring in Bobby Farnham. Okay, that makes all the sense in the world. It makes zero sense, and I'm not knocking Beautiful Bobby, because we all love Beautiful Bobby in the Midnight Express around here. Bobby Farnham's a tough kid. And you know what? I'm going to take up – there's an asshole that writes for HockeyBuzz.com under the Penguins section. His name is Ryan Wilson. He's a complete dunce. He actually had the nerve to say that Bobby Farnham has a Ivy League education but a community college hockey intelligence. You know what? Let me tell you something. Guess who he wouldn't fucking say that to? Exactly. Wouldn't utter that to Bobby Farnham. Because I don't care what anybody says. Bobby Farnham's a tough kid. He's from Boston. He can fight. He can hit. He's not going to score goals. They didn't bring him here to score goals. So, if anybody on our site wants to go after this guy, his name is Ryan Wilson, HockeyBuzz.com. Click on the Penguins links that they have there, and you'll see what I'm talking about. He doesn't like Scuderi, which is fine. I have no problem with that. But when you just say that somebody belongs in community college because they're dumb, or you use that insult to say they belong playing community college level hockey, This guy obviously has no fucking idea what he's talking about, which is why I stay away from that site. Eklund's a good dude. Mike Augello is a good guy. And the Tim guy they have down in Florida is really good. I enjoy all of those guys. But this guy is a dunce, and I'm going to leave it at that. But getting back to the trade for a second, 323-642-1216 is to call us if you'd like. But back to the trade. When you trade Simon Dupre, who arguably really never got a fair shot in Pittsburgh because Dan Bylsma didn't trust the younger players, but when he did play, there's always going to be a growth issue when it comes to some of these guys. But he had started to really pick it up last season and be sort of nasty, and he became a big deal and a big prospect. And we trade him for Ben Lovejoy. And what I don't understand about that is it goes right back to the circling the wagons again. How many times can you see the bearded lady before you stop paying the entrance fee? It's like barking for the yak woman or whatever it is. You know, you can only pay that service entry. So I can only see like the lady born with three heads a couple of times, and then there's no real surprise anymore. You know what I mean? Well, right. Or Bat Boy or whatever any of this crap is. But then he comes out publicly after he makes this statement first. Jim Rutherford says, well, Ben Lovejoy's had a couple of years in the Anaheim system, and he had a lot more responsibilities, and his game has really improved. My ass, his game has not improved. If anything, he's regressed. And then Rutherford says, mid-June, well, you know, thinking about it, because I like to make fun of Rutherford. That's all, folks. Rutherford says, well, looking back on it, that was probably a mistake. Okay, well, that's great. So you just told Ben Lovejoy he was a mistake. That's going to make him have all the confidence in the world, but it still doesn't make up for the asinine, stupidest trade I've seen in 10 years by the Penguins. Because not only was Simon Dupre probably better than Dumoulin, probably better than Pouliot at this point, probably better than Mata at this point, you got rid of him for nothing. You just gave him away for Lovejoy. Are you kidding me? Anaheim's laughing their ass off right now, especially when Dupre signs that big deal for 5 years, $18.5 million. He's worth every penny. So to round this all out, what I'm specifically saying is Jim Rutherford has a history of doing the same exact thing. And he's sort of doing it. He sort of did it this offseason. The only difference is he added Phil Kessel. Now, had he gotten rid of Scuderi or Kunitz, we might be talking a little different ballgame here, but they're the same moves designed to add depth. And I'm not saying we don't have it. I'm not saying we won't. But what I'm simply saying is, on paper, I don't buy it. I just don't buy it. And that's going to get to this next little segment. Do you have anything else you want to say about Rutherford?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on.
All of us have jobs. When you routinely make the same as errors over and over again, you get pulled aside, you get told, okay, this is how you correct your error, let's try to fix it. Matter of fact, the Penguins organization, along with every single organization, has done that time and time again. Pulled their people aside and said, look, you're making a few mistakes here, this is how we want you to correct it. But eventually, if you don't correct things, you got to go. Now, the trade history speaks for itself. And again, I have no malice towards anyone. I have no personal hatred towards anyone. It's just that these trades haven't panned out. And you want living proof that things have not panned out? You will never get, at least for right now, someone to replace someone as good as Paul Martin was on this team when it came to being partnered with Letang night after night. Cole's pretty good, but he's not Paul Martin good. Oh, yeah, and let's throw more salt into this, shall we? Martin signed for less money with San Jose. Thanks a bunch, Rutherford. We really appreciated that.
Yeah, and that's the sad thing about all of that is in the last two seasons, he has told Matt Niskanen to take a hike. And we can argue about Brooks Orpik all day long. Okay, I hate the Capitals. I just thought I would say that because everyone knows I hate the Capitals, and I will continue to hate the Capitals, and I think that Brooks Orpik sucks, and that's just my opinion. I don't think he's worth the money they gave him, and I wouldn't have paid him over three a year. That's besides the point. But anyway, Rutherford says, go ahead, go get your money. See you, Niskanen. See you, Orpik. Don't need you. Not a problem. England, whatever. Get lost. Don't need you either. Whatever. And then we get to Paul Martin. And at first he tells Paul, he says publicly, ah, Paul, go get your money. You're not going to get it here. Paul says, all right, you know, whatever. Midway through the season, Paul Martin says, saying, you know, I'd like to kind of stay in Pittsburgh. I like the way this is kind of going under Johnston. And maybe we can work out a deal. And Rutherford says, all right, you know, so they, I don't know if preliminary talk started. And then the next thing you know, Rutherford says, I'm not going to discuss anything until after the season. And guess what? He never made a phone call to Paul Martin. Paul Martin signed. They thought, and conservatively, Paul Martin could have gotten seven and a half a season, per season for 3 or 4 years to round it out. And I think Rutherford thought that they weren't going to be able to get Martin for under six. He signed for like 4.25.
4.8.
It was a 4.8 for three seasons.
Something like that.
Yeah, he signed for a lot less money to go play somewhere, and I think San Jose is a contender. So good for Paul Martin. I'm happy for him. I know he used to dog him a little bit, but ultimately at the end of the day, he got what he was worth. He took a pay cut to go somewhere where he wanted to go, and the rest is sort of history, and Rutherford didn't address it. He didn't bring in anybody. Now, there's all kinds of rumors about Dustin Byfuglien, and apparently the Penguins had some communication with Winnipeg at some point about a move for Byfuglien, but I don't see that happening because I think Winnipeg's going to wait to see how the season fleshes out, and the price is going to be steep, you know, and what can the Penguins afford to do? And there may be some guys on the waiver wire you can pick up, and we haven't seen Erickson play yet, and we haven't seen Clendening play, but you know what, after watching that the other night, and I don't know who it was, if it was Schaefer on our page or if it was Craig Kennedy the second. I don't know if it was him. I can't remember who said it, but somebody had said, you know what, why don't we sit Scuderi out, bring up Clendening, let him play, insert Erickson and sit Lovejoy, you know, and I think that's a good idea. And I think that's the one thing that we will see. I think we will see a little bit of tinkering. But we've got about 37 minutes left. Dan, do we have an update? Are we close to an update?
We're close to an update. Got it right now.
All right, let's do the update.
Here are more score updates at the second intermission in New Jersey in the Meadowlands. It is 3-1 Winnipeg over the Devils. At the end of two, over in Columbus, the Rangers and the Jackets are tied at one. With 17 left to go in the second, the Leafs are getting blanked in Detroit 3-0, and it is tied in Brooklyn at one with 13:50 left to go in the second between Chicago and the Islanders.
Go Islanders in Brooklyn. All right. Barclays Center is nice, but I don't think it was built for hockey. That's the problem. There's a lot of bad seats at Barclays. But you know what? Good for the Islanders. Good for Charles Wang. I just like saying that. Charles Wang. Hey, Charlie, how's your Wang? But anyhow, so that leads us to this next segment. And you know, if you guys want to call in and give us a ration, go for it. Ron Korber, you better be listening. Kennedy, Converse, Heather Gaughan. I mean, this was Shoop. I mean, this list goes on and on. Tommy Ettinger, Jack Mullet. I know we got a lot of people listening, so feel free to call in 323-642-1216. All right, this next segment's not going to be very friendly. It's about Mike Johnston. And the reason why I'm bringing this up, there's a lot of arguing, and I'm going to let Dan tell this story in a second, but there's a lot of arguing actually on the Penguins' actual NHL site today about some references about Dan Bylsma, because apparently, you know, Pittsburgh, us yinzers, as they say, can't seem to let go of the Dan Bylsma cancer that's hung around our neck like a clove of garlic, you know, waiting for Dracula or whatever. I don't want to compare Johnston to Bylsma, although I think they're very similar and alike in a lot of ways that is not for this team's benefit. But I wanted to mention something today, and people are going to have an argument with us about this. Mike Johnston canceled practice today. Now, and I saw that Jarrett Hamm had said, well, I'm sure there's good reason. Well, you know what? Yeah, they left late last night. They probably got into Arizona at 2 or 3 in the morning, got a good night's sleep, probably went for breakfast, you know, whatever. But you know what? When your team doesn't play well, and when your team does not, has not gelled. Okay, sorry about that. I think we lost a little bit of communication there. I don't know how that happened. So I really don't know what anybody heard or what anybody didn't hear. So I guess I'll start over about with the Mike Johnston issue. Look, he's not like Dan Bylsma. They're very similar in a lot of ways. But the one thing that I definitely wanted to talk about when it came to the situation was the fact that Mike Johnston canceled practice this morning. Now, I understand it's a lot, you know, you're flying out from Dallas to Arizona, and you want a good night's sleep, you want to get up early in the morning, but you know what? It wouldn't have killed this team for 45 minutes to go out and just work together. It didn't have to be an event that is excruciating. It didn't have to be a hard practice. It just needed to be a practice where they work on stuff. Now, somebody might say, well, you know what? They need to rest. I don't want to hear this, because how many optionals did we have last season? If this is the way you're going to start your season, don't expect anything to change. And that's my issue. I have a bunch of issues with Johnston to begin with, but that's just one of them. Dan?
I got to tell y'all, this afternoon when Jeff pulled me aside and said, you're not going to believe this. And I said, what's going on, boss? Practice canceled. I just said, same old shit, different day. You know, it's not as if we scored 2 goals last night and lost 3-2 and played a full 60. You got blanked by Dallas, one of the fastest teams in the NHL, a team that loves to say, ha-ha, gotcha, to a lot of good teams. And I understand the need for a good night's sleep. I understand the need of taking care of your bodies. However, this team is not congealed yet. This team is not together. And since this team is not together, there's nothing that a good 45 minutes in the afternoon or morning after breakfast couldn't hurt. And then you go out, you enjoy the Phoenix area, and then you maybe sit back, take a look at what the competition's doing tonight, because they're playing a late game, and I do mean late game out in L.A. tonight against the Kings. They're playing at 10:30 East, for crying out loud, out there in L.A. with the Coyotes. And then you get up the next day, game day, you have another practice, about 45 minutes, and you get ready to go. You get your mind set for the game. That's 2 practices, 45 minutes each, an hour and a half total, that you could work on establishing your chemistry. But instead of doing that, coach says, it's okay, we're going to take the day off. Really? We're back to this shit again? You know, that was one of my problems with Dan Bylsma. Optional skates out of our asses. Last year, over 40 in the regular season. No wonder why the Rangers beat us in the first round. They had like 25 the entire year. Jeff and I see the reasonings that you might want to cancel a practice here and there. We also see the reasoning from time to time where you'll need an optional day. However, you don't want this to be a consistent thing. And this is just even more proof that it's back to the same old shit that we've seen the last couple of years, and it's quite awful disgusting.
No, it definitely is, and that's one of the problems. And I've talked to Dan about my days of playing hockey and hockey practices, and if what happens if you play bad in a game and stuff like that. And the thing is that, granted, it's just one game, but there has to be an accountability. And this is where I really have a problem with Mike Johnston. And it seems to me like he has and I understand they haven't gelled, but at some point last night when you're not winning, at some point it has to be incumbent to change the lines, to try Plotkinov on a different line, to try Bonino on a different line, to get Kunitz, who couldn't keep up with Crosby or Kessel, off the first line. He did nothing. Didn't try to change it up. Instead, with what? 6 minutes to go, whatever. He pulls Fleury with 3.5 minutes left in the game, and they still can't do anything. Now, we all have bad games, and that's just par for the course, especially when it's your first game. But if they're going to start the season with this type of attitude of, well, you know what, we've got, what, 2 games in 3 days? Let's sleep in. That's not going to work for me. And it's not going to work for me because it's the same laxed attitude that he had with this team all goddamn season last season, and it caused problems. Because guys that got here halfway through the season didn't gel. Your LaPierres, your Spallings, your Arcabellos, who they gave up on, who ended up going and scoring 15 goals the remainder of the season. It's that type of atmosphere. Now, I'm not saying they should have gone out. You know, maybe a day off would do them some good. Don't focus on the loss. Just one loss, move on. But this, like Dan said, it's a consistency issue. This team, if they start this way, I guarantee you this year we're going to see 40-plus optional skates again. And if we see that, then the results, atypically, will possibly be the same. Now, I understand they have off days, maintenance days, which let me tell you what a maintenance day is. You know what a maintenance day is?
Detail, sir.
Stay home. Stay home. You're sore. Stay home. Sit in the training room. Sit in the hot tub. Put some ice on your knees. That's a maintenance day. Or a maintenance day could be just hanging out, you know, in the locker room with the guys drinking a Coke or drinking coffee, relaxing, maybe looking at some game tape. Everybody needs a maintenance day. I'm not complaining. But I guarantee you that this team, I know Paul Martin had at least 20 maintenance days last year, you know, and then it's a cycle that doesn't seem to end. And the other thing about Johnston, because I wanted to get into the other thing, is it me or does he have that same look on his face like he has no fucking idea where he is when stuff happens? Bielsma had the same look on his face. Where am I? What? I'm at a hockey game. It's the third period, and my keys are on the ground, and my fly is down. Oh, it's like Back to the Future. It's like deja vu over and again. They both look like they're fucking lost. Like they're off their medication, and they left the nut ward, and the only thing they're missing is the bedsheet they were wearing in the yard. This guy, you know, the one thing Johnston can't do is he cannot seem to make adjustments on the fly. And I love it when there's a penalty. He has that look and that smile on his face, like he's like, I see the color. I see colors. Well, what colors are they? Meat. That meat's not a color, Mike. Yellow. Ugh. I'm not saying the guy's dumb, and I'm not trying to chastise him. 2-3-2-3-6-4-2-1-2-1-6. I'm not saying anything. I am simply saying...
Hello!
The guy just looks – okay, I knew a guy one time, and I probably shouldn't say his name because he was a hockey coach, and I don't want to throw him under the bus. I don't know what kind of hockey coach he really was. It was my first year of pro roller hockey, and he was the brother of a guy I know, and the guy I know was a goalie, and he was a good player. He's a hippie, though, very strange kind of hippie, and he would look at you and just smile, and his eyes were glazed over. And he had no fucking idea what planet he was on. He had no clue. And when you spoke to him, like if I looked at you, Dan, and I said, Dan, how you doing? You're like, oh, yeah, I'm all right, Jeff. He would just smile like he was, like every word that I spoke, he was trying to transcribe from Klingon to English to Martian back to. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is Mike Johnston has that same look. Like he just has no fucking clue what planet he's on half the time. Am I wrong?
I would like to ingest the Bielsma mem that makes Jeff crack up every day. Before I am fired, let me teach you something about puck possession.
More like demonic possession.
Yeah, demonic possession. I got to tell you, the way Johnston has looked, and I've watched him for a year now as head coach, and Bielsma before him, he reminds me a lot of... To put it in a civilian term, for those who either one, don't follow the game that much, or two, get tired of hockey references all day, he looks like, to be honest,
When you're at a steakhouse, you order your steak a certain way, say medium rare, and it's just a little too much medium for medium rare, and the server who is new just gives you this spacey look like, and just freezes. That's Mike in a nutshell. I mean, last night, all the time in the world to call a timeout, he waits until, what, a minute left in the game, something like that? By then, it's too late to call your timeout. You've had all this time to make adjustments, Mike, and you didn't make them. So why are you calling a timeout with a minute left to go to the game, down 3-0? It would have been nice to get a goal in that minute. But really, I'm speechless because of the fact that this is almost, it's not the same thing as as Ottawa last year, where we had a 3-0 lead going into the third and squandered that pretty quickly. At least we showed up that night with forwards that could score. Then it was in December. But still, last night, the expressions on his face acting like nothing was wrong was pretty fucking pathetic.
It's almost like he looked like he just didn't know what to do. Like he was almost surprised somehow that that was going on. And I don't know why that's a surprise to him because, you know, if you go onto Facebook and you can check out our group page at Penn's Vlog Post under groups, the natives were restless very quickly. And we've got a really good group. Philip DiMartino and Ron Korber, Rick Porter and Kennedy and Patrick Robert Mason, and the list just goes Tommy Ettinger, Brian Shoup, PJ Hayhurst, Giannacola,
Haley Rice,
and the list just goes on and on with all the people that are in our group. And what I always find amazing is you always have in groups like this, you have cynics. You have cynics who it doesn't matter what the team does, and that's what people will say we're doing. We're being cynics.
Yeah.
But you have a group that no matter how good they are, they're fucking atrocious. Then you have the people that are like, you know what? It'll get better. We just need to give it time. And they say analytical things. Then there are people who I don't know what fucking game that they watch, but it's not the one that I witnessed.
Like Cracchiola.
Like Michelle Cracchiolo. Yeah. She and Sam Cassan. Sam Cassan is at least average. He at least sort of calls it both ways. Cracchiola, Dan, you got to stop sending her texts about your love. But, you know, Dan and I were talking tonight about, he asked me some questions about, well, whatever happened if you played a bad game or you had a bad game. And first of all, nobody can ever kick you as hard as you're going to kick yourself. If you're a captain, that's a special kind of stress. But I was telling him that there were moments where you do win sprints. There are moments when you get called out. There are moments your skates get thrown in the trash. There are moments where you're in a semi-blizzard and the coach is so pissed off, he tells you to get off the bus and walk to the hotel, which is 20 miles down the road, with your gear in hand. So there's penalties for that kind of stuff. And I know at the NHL level, it's different than the Coast or the A or even the I back in the day, or even the Ontario Hockey League or Quebec Major Junior or the Maritimes or the WHL, and I can just keep going on and on and on and on and on. But the point is that with Mike Johnson, it just kind of – sometimes I just – I hate to say this because I don't know the guy, but he seems like he's just in over his head a little bit. Now, what I don't get is they brought in a Western Hockey League coach, okay? He had some assistant coaching, but you're bringing in a guy from the Western Hockey League, and then you bring in a guy like Agnew who hasn't been able to keep a job, is usually fired, but then he got fired from St. Louis, fired from whoever else. You know, he had one good season in the American Hockey League as a coach named Coach of the Year or whatever. But I don't understand if – maybe it's the way Mike Johnson does things. I know he's a highly intelligent guy, and he's a statistical, plan it out on a map and let's find the best way to get there kind of guy. But at some point, you have to abandon that, and you have to really have a game plan. And I'm not even saying the guy doesn't have a game plan, but – when he looks like that on the bench, like he took a dump in his pants and he's wondering, you know, and he's wondering where the smell is coming from, you know, and he sees everybody on the bench moving the opposite direction and he still can't figure out it's him. I mean, it's not even to say he's a bad coach, because I think he's a good coach. I just think he's got himself into a position here where he's dealing with some prima donnas. And I think also to some extent, this is Pittsburgh, man. And a lot of people may not put the Penguins in that sort of New York Yankees kind of, or Boston Red Sox kind of mentality, but that's exactly where they're at.
Because
you're not playing for like some rich banker asshole. You're playing for Mario Lemieux, and it doesn't get any more stressful, I think, than that. And then if you look at the arena, my God, are you kidding me? The locker room is great. Everything is fantastic. They have soda bars, juice bars, weight room, sauna room. I mean, they got all these nice things, and they built them a practice rink over in Cranberry, stone throw from console, a little while down the road. And yet they have all these luxuries, and it's like nobody can hold them accountable. And to me, that's just, it's very strange. But in hindsight, at the end of the day, Johnson's not a bad guy. I think he just, maybe, you know what it is? Here's what it is. I'm used to Dan Bylsma standing there like he can't figure it out. And then in interviews, stumble his way through, well, you know.
I remember those things.
And then you get Johnson, who says, well, you know, the power play, you see, we've got to do this. We've got to collapse better. We've got to get the puck, get our shots on net. That's all wave file stuff. That's what all coaches say. Maybe it's just because we don't have a coach like, I don't know, like when we had Michel Therrien, when he came out, just, we stink. There's not a guy in that room that played well. There's not a guy in that room that's tough. There's not a guy in that room that deserves to be here right now. Matter of fact. And I think that they've consistently gone out and gotten coaches that are pushovers.
Yeah.
You know, hey, Dan, I don't feel like going to practice. It's okay, Sid. You want to sit on my lap? You know, like Santa Claus or whatever. What are your thoughts? And I'm not trying to dog Johnson. I'm really not. I'm just saying that I think they really need a coach that's going to push their buttons. Dan, your thoughts?
You want to know a coach that would push their buttons but not stand a chance to get hired in Pittsburgh? John Tortorella. I'll never forget when they were doing the countdown to the Winter Classic, when they were in the Winter Classic, they were going to play Philadelphia. And he literally ripped into these guys. I mean, literally ripped. And he said, don't shit your pants. I mean, these guys are a good team, but you need to get out there. We've got 40 more minutes. Get out there and play type attitude. And I think if not for what he did, and said about the organization, about Crosby and Malkin, you know, two winning stars, you know, the most arrogant organization, blah, blah, blah. He might have stood a chance in possibly getting a phone call. Because, you know, I like old school coaches that tell it like it is, but without, there's a way to get through to your players without coddling and saying, come on, sit on my lap. It's going to be okay, son. And also cursing them out. There's a good fine line, and honestly, Therrien did a good job. It's just, the problem is that with this generation, with some athletes, they don't want tough love. And it's not just in hockey, it's in every other sport. Oh, I don't like the way the coach is calling me out. Well, if you're not doing your job, son, why do you think you're getting called out? If you're doing your job, the coach wouldn't be calling you out on the carpet for poor performance. He wouldn't be announcing this to the press. He wouldn't have to answer these questions night after night. What the Penguins need is for Johnston to grow a pair of cojones. And sadly, they hired the wrong coach because of the fact that when you got in Rutherford, by the time they hired him, and got into the hiring of coaches, the one coach that could have come in was already scooped up in Nashville, Peter Laviolette.
That's a good point. And we talked a lot about Laviolette. I have a lot of respect for him. I think he's a good coach. And I think it's also going to be interesting to see Tortorella coach Team USA.
Ooh.
But listen, everybody, I don't want everybody to think we hate the Penguins. It's not that. It's just a necessity of, there are still some things, I think, inside this organization that haven't changed, and it doesn't result necessarily in a one-game loss. Like I said, and I'm going to say it 100 times, and the reason why I'm going to say this 100 times on this show is because we're going to get hate mail in the morning. My God, they lose one game. This is beyond one game. This is about, listen, let's be honest. The defense on the back end, we need another player. It's as simple as that. On the front end, Cullen Bonino, Plotkinov. Okay, let's see how they work out. I'm just saying, from an outside look, it sort of looks very similar to last season, just in the design of how he made some decisions. That's all I'm saying. I still think the Penguins are going to be a good team. Regardless, I think they just got to give it time. Penguins will be good, and I think we'll be okay. But I will also say, if this team goes 2-7-1, you're going to see some action pretty quick from the front office, because I don't think they'll put up with it this year. I really don't. And I also think that this team is probably going to have to make three moves this season, easy. They're going to have to make two or three moves. I would say probably two at the max is what's going to happen, one of which will be in the before the middle of the season, and one will be obviously at the deadline. I could speculate right now on who that's going to be, but I'm definitely not. We're running out of time here with 13 to go. 13 minutes. We're going to go to a game break.
Final game break of the night. 11:56 left to go in the third. Winnipeg 3, the Devils 1. 14:49 left to go in the third. The Rangers and Jackets are tied at 1. With 6:09 left to go in the second. Bless you. Toronto is just getting nailed for nothing. And finally, they're about to get into the second intermission over at Barclays Center. The Hawks 2 and the Islanders 1.
Well, maybe the Islanders will pull it out. Listen, in final, the last couple minutes here. Sorry if we didn't get to anybody who called in. We were just kind of rattling off on our own tonight and doing our own thing. But I just wanted to say that, look, it's only the first game of the season. This team has a huge learning curve ahead of itself. But I am going to tell you this. If they get their ass kicked in Arizona, you're going to see some problems. And you're going to see a lot of criticism very quickly. And that's mainly because Arizona is, I think, the worst team in the league. Mm-hmm. And we're also going to be playing John Scott, the Kraken. And we're going to see, we're going to see Steve Downey, former Penguin, Joe Vitale, former Penguin, and Antoine Vermette, former Chicago Blackhawk, who won a Stanley Cup last season. So I think tomorrow night's game, looking ahead, is it tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night,
10 o'clock out in Arizona, Pens and Coyotes. And I think the Penguins are going to have another physical game. They're going to have to play a physical style, and I hope that the day off today, you know, if that's what they needed, then that's what they needed. That's fine. I don't think we should have the same problems against Arizona that we had against Dallas, because let's remember, Dallas is one of the quickest teams in the league, and I also picked them for, I believe, the conference finals against San Jose, so in my preseason predictions. But Dan, what do you think that the Penguins have to do tomorrow night against Arizona?
First and foremost, tighten up. You know you've got physical players on the Coyotes, some of them former Penguins, and you know they're going to come out guns blazing. And it's nothing personal. It's strictly business. What the Penguins need to do is learn from the mistakes of last night against Dallas and say, okay, well, this is what we need to work on. And just start working and building consistency. If you can start doing that and aiming towards playing a full 60, I guarantee you a lot of the negative talk, not only on Facebook and Twitter, but also on the Penguins website, it's going to start to slowly go away. But if they get their asses kicked tomorrow night, I don't even want to think of what the flight is going to be like from Phoenix back to Pittsburgh, because that's going to be the start of a 5-game series. And some of those teams, oh boy, I got to tell you, it's going to be nasty. So they have to win tomorrow night. And I will be giving my keys on our website tomorrow morning as to what to look for and a prediction.
Yeah. Also, I think it's going to be a physical game, and I would assume they're going to start Fleury. I would assume naturally. And I think you may see Clendening and Erickson up in the lineup. I think they may switch some guys around. They have to. Now, if he doesn't do anything about the forwards and they play the same way or have the same sort of problems, then I think then you're going to have to address some stuff. But if they go into Arizona and get killed, then there's going to be a lot of drama in Pittsburgh. It won't just be with the media. It's going to be with the players and the owners and the management, because that will not be an acceptable sort of stance. And I wanted to ask you a question, and I'll get to you in just 1 second, but I wanted to say that my prediction, because we talked about this the other night, two things. The first thing is, who's going to get the first Penguins goal of the regular season? I'm going to say it's Evgeny Malkin. I'm still going to go with Malkin. I think he's going to get the first goal. But most importantly, I also wanted to ask you, do you think Mike Johnston, even though we're talking about one loss here, it's only one game, but do you think he came into this season sort of on the hot seat?
Answer to your first question, at first I thought Plotkinoff. I'm switching that over. I think Kessel will get the first Penguins goal of the season. It's just something about it. I think he'll get the first goal tomorrow night against Arizona. Do I think Johnston's on the hot seat?
Well, did he come in the hot seat?
If he came in on the hot seat, it's a good possibility. Because Pittsburgh, and I'm not knocking the town at all, they are used to winning. Okay? The Steelers have been winners for God knows how long. The Penguins, yeah, they've had a couple of bumps in the road since the back-to-back cups. But for the most part, the Penguins have been what? Consistent winners. And the thing about Mario is that he knows what he likes and what he doesn't like. And if the team comes out, say in the first, let's say the first 15 games, four wins, 9 losses, 2 overtime losses in the first 15 games, I don't think Johnston's going to survive. So I think he came in slightly on the hot seat, but the longer it takes for this team to congeal, and if we keep getting blown out and not even playing a full 60, that warm seat is going to get hotter. And if it gets hotter, as Jeff could tell you, it all depends on how the owners feel, big time.
No, I think he came in. I think he definitely came in the hot seat. Maybe not necessarily because of the playoff performance, because that had a lot to do with Rutherford's ridiculous moves.
Yeah.
However, he gave Johnston Kessel.
Mm-hmm.
He gave Malkin Plotkinoff, which we could argue about that all day long, of whether that was the right decision. But we'll see about that. But in a way, I almost got to say that if Kessel and the forward lines don't do much, that's fine. Rutherford gave him those guys. But then doesn't that kind of fall on Rutherford just a bit? Because he didn't go out and get exactly maybe what he should have, if that's the way that this goes, say 4-9 and whatever have you. So I think that, you know, like you said, if they start tremendously losing, is it going to be on Johnston? Absolutely. He's going to be the fall guy. Rutherford won't get fired if that's the way that this goes. And I'm not saying it is, because I don't think it will necessarily go that way. But if it does, worst case scenario, you'll see Johnston fired immediately. That will be the change. And what people will say is, well, his systems were very junior hockey-ish, not fit for the NHL. And then what you'll see is you'll see a coach in that changes the scheme to a rough and tumble team, and then this team will pick up and win a lot of games. And I think that's what would happen in that scenario. But I think that if they do, like you suggested, and they go on a horrible skid of like 4-9-3.
Yeah, let's do that.
They don't have a choice but to fire Johnston. They won't have a choice. And that's why I said, I think the minute that Kessel came here, that clock started ticking on Mike Johnston.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying that that's the route it will go, but that's the route it could take. And that's unfortunate for Johnston, but that's what you get when you have 5 of the best players in the world on a team and you don't score a single goal in a game. That's a problem. even though they lost and it's just the first game, and we can talk about that all day long, but it's going to go in a bad direction very quickly for Mike Johnson if this team cannot function. Because what's he going to do when he's called into the office? Say, well, I'm sorry, we're 4-9-3, but, you know, or we'll say 4-11-1, 4-11-2, 4-11-3. You know, I'm sorry, Jim, but this asshole Agnew, I can't do anything. And you didn't give me a defenseman. I needed a defenseman. You know what Rutherford's going to say? I gave you Phil Kessel.
Mm-hmm.
You wanted youth. I gave you A, B, C, and D, and you're 4-11-2. You're fired. And that's the way that that'll go. Now, I hope that's not the way it goes. I really do. And I don't think that's the way it'll be. But that's why I'm saying I think Johnston was probably on the hot seat. Final thoughts?
My final thought on that, and it's very clear, Johnston may not have been the one that was going to last an entire 3-year deal. I think that he would have been the scapegoat had the team not got into the playoffs last season. And I think that if this team does not start to push on and go forward in the right direction, he will be the scapegoat if there's a really bad start. Yes, Rutherford can come out and say, well, I gave you Kessel, but a lot of us have the hockey knowledge to know that it's a matter of addition and subtraction. Okay, you subtracted Paul Martin, but there's no one there with anything of a Paul Martin. So, in a sense, yeah, Mike can go and say, boss, you know, this is what's going on. But the other side of that coin is it's not going to save his job. So that's all I have to say about it is, yeah, the hot seat's definitely there.
Final score for tomorrow.
Final score for tomorrow to be determined as to whether or not they can actually come out and play or not.
My prediction for tomorrow is 4-1 Penguins. I just think they have too much firepower for Arizona. But if it goes the other way, I don't think Arizona's going to put a lot of goals on the Penguins. But we'll just have to wait and see. We're cutting out a little bit earlier tonight, but I wanted to thank everybody for listening in. For those that called we didn't get to, we apologize. You can reach us anytime. Our radio show number will never change. It's always going to be 323-642-1216. You can reach us over at PensVlogPost.com. You can also reach us on Facebook, the group page Pens Vlog Post. We want to thank everybody for listening in tonight. And per the usual, keep your sticks down and throw off your gloves as quick as you can. That doesn't make any sense. I was going for something poetic. So maybe the best way to end this show tonight is by doing this. Have a good night.
I'm giving.